Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast that explores the intersection of faith and Christian living. Crossroads is part of the media ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Get to know us by visiting us online at fapc.org.
Hi, I'm Jamie Staley, and I'm the Director of Christian Education at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. Welcome to Crossroads Podcast. I am really excited this month to take a bit of a break from all of the hard things that are going on in the world to talk about something a little bit more fun, and that is C.S. Lewis and C.S. Lewis's letters to children. And this month, I'm here with Ann Wilcox, who is a professor emerita of education and pedagogical consultant for the Family Faith Formation Project in the Office of Church Engagement at Whitworth University in Spokane, Washington, and a longtime C.S. Lewis enthusiast. Anne taught elementary school for a very long time, where she taught children the Narnia series, and so has a passion for engaging children with the works of C.S. Lewis. And so I invited her here today to share a little bit with us about some of the letters to children that C.S. Lewis has written, as well as some of the letters that he received. And in a small side note, disclaimer here, Ann Wilcox is also my mom. So I'm excited to have her join me today to talk about this. So welcome.
Oh, thank you for the chance to talk about these delightful things with you and you, my daughter. So lots of fun to have conversations for sure.
All right. So, you know, I just remember from my own childhood and sitting in on some of your classes with your fourth and fifth graders as they were going through the Narnia series and experiencing C.S. Lewis for the first time and just really getting into the world of Narnia. And I just remember how engaged those kids were with all of this work. And so it's exciting to kind of see how engaged not only your class was, but how engaged other children were, so much so to write to the author with their questions and with their imaginations and with their ideas for C.S. Lewis. What do you think it was about Lewis that made children want to write to him in the first place?
You know, I think that the fact that he often returned the letters, not often, but always, I should say, he felt a deep responsibility with all the letters that started coming to him as his writing became known to answer those letters. And there is a playfulness and a sort of intertwined with a seriousness. He cared about children, which I think is delightful to know that in his essay, The Abolition of Man, he writes, "I myself do not enjoy the society of small children." And then he goes on to say, "I recognize this as a deficit, as a defect in me." So he's definitely not feeling as never been a father. He was eventually a stepfather, but he didn't feel as comfortable with children on one hand. But on the other hand, I think as we'll see through this podcast, when we look at how he responded to children, you realize he really valued their opinions. He answered the letter seriously or playfully, depending on what was required. So I think they felt heard by him. For sure. I think that's one of the reasons why they wrote him.
It's very, very meaningful. So let's get into kind of the meat. What did they write to him about? What kind of letters did he receive? Or what were some of your favorites, I guess?
Well, he just, there are so many fun ones. And one thing that I really, really enjoy is somebody finally asked him, a child finally said, "Where in the world did you get this name Aslan?" And of course, as a linguist, he responds that, "I found the name in the notes to Lane's Arabian Nights It is the Turkish for lion. And then he talks about how he pronounces it. He pronounces it as Aslan. So he writes that out linguistically. Then some of my favorites are about Reepicheep. Reepicheep is such a favorite character. And we find out through Lewis's autobiography and some of his letters to other people, and even a letter to his brother when he was young, that he actually had a pet mouse. And the pet mouse was named Peter. And I have a delightful, I was able to find a delightful letter that Lewis wrote to Warney saying that Peter had a real problem one day. The maid heard Peter just making all of this noise. And when the maid walked in to find out what was going on, there was a big black cat ready to pounce on Peter. So the maid, knowing how important Peter was to Lewis, she ran after that cat and got it out of the way so the mouse could survive. But a young girl named Hilla wrote Lewis around in the 1950s, and not only wrote to him but sent him her creation of Reepicheep. So here's Lewis's response. He goes, "Up on my word, a statue of Reepicheep. He stares at me from my mantelpiece with just the right mixture of courtesy and readiness to fight." But Hilla later, in the years after she was a child and she had grown up, she said, actually, that Reepicheep statue was a rather primitive effort stitched out of felt. So he delighted in that, her expression of that, and responded in a beautiful way. And then there was another letter that shows how much he enjoyed mice. And apparently one of the children that used to write to him regularly said, you know, I'd like to tell you about my guinea pig. So he responds with, oh, I never saw a guinea pig that took any notice of humans. They take plenty of attention to one another. Of those small animals, I think hamsters are the most amusing. And to tell you the truth, I'm still fond of mice. So there's his preference. But he also says, but the guinea pigs go well with your learning German. If they talked, I'm pretty sure that's the language they would speak. So he may think, you know, Lewis may have had the opinion about himself that he didn't understand how to be around children. But oh my goodness, what an imagination that he expressed in those letters. And then another child gave him a colored picture of Reepicheep, and his response is, Reepicheep in your colored picture has just the right perky, cheeky expression. I love real mice. So we have evidence again and again that mice were definitely his preference as far as pets go. So no wonder we all love the character of Reepicheep. Lewis had spent a lot of time looking at mice and were able to create that character in an informed way. But he also had cats on the premises at the kilns. And there's a very cute letter he wrote to a child named Martin, which he wrote to regularly. He says that we've been bringing up a new kitten who's marmalade colored, and he seems to be starting in life well. At least he has already chased a strange dog out of the garden. So again, how fun would it be for children to understand he's really hearing their letters and responding in playful as well as serious ways? And then maybe one last one about his sense of humor. He had a group of children write to him about their new baby sister. And so he says, "Congratulations on your new baby sister. I like the red hair." So they must have sent a picture of this baby with red hair. And he said, "I never saw a picture of a baby shower before. I had to put up my umbrella to look at it." So he's playing with rain and the idea of a shower. So
even lots of imagination and fun.
Lots of imagination and fun. Just lots and lots. And I think it's interesting to note, too, that he wrote one young girl. He wrote several letters over 20 years to her. So he was faithful with his correspondence, too, and always wanted to answer those letters.
Mm. So I know that in some of his letters, you know, some of the children are asking about, you know, a little bit deeper kind of faith questions. Where do we see that in the letters? The kids' struggles with where they're seeing their faith and how Lewis responds to that.
You know, there is one letter that I think really answers that question beautifully and specifically and with a lot of detail. And so I'll read some of it, but also tell about some of it, because it is not a letter from a child, but it's a letter from Mrs. K, Lawrence's mother. And this mother writes apparently to say Lawrence is really worried because he thinks he's loving Aslan more than Jesus. And Lewis responds so creatively and insightfully about this. So he gives 1, 2, 3 points that he wants the mother to tell Lawrence. So here's point number one. And here I quote Lewis here, so I'm reading his letter. "Even if he was loving Aslan more than Jesus," and then in parentheses, I'll explain in a moment why he really can't be doing this, "he would not be an idol worshiper." So apparently this Lawrence thought, "Oh, am I becoming an idol worshiper by loving Aslan?" So Lewis goes on, "If he was an idol worshiper, he'd be doing it on purpose. Whereas now he's doing it because he can't help doing it and trying hard not to do it. But God knows quite well how hard we find it to love him more than anyone or anyone else. And he won't be angry with us as long as we're trying, and he will help us." So here's this very oversensitive little boy wanting to be sure he's loving God in the right way, but he's fallen in love with Aslan. So the second point in this letter that Lewis illustrates is number two, and I quote, "But Lawrence can't really love Aslan more than Jesus, even if he feels that's what he's doing. For the things he loves Aslan for doing or saying are simply the things Jesus really did and said. So that when Lawrence thinks he's loving Aslan, he's really loving Jesus, and perhaps loving him more than he ever did before. Of course, there's one thing Aslan has that Jesus has not, and I mean it's the body of the lion. But remember, if there are other worlds and they need to be saved, and Christ were to save them as he would, he might really be taking all sorts of bodies in them that we don't know about." So he's, of course, going into the fact that this story of Narnia is not an allegory, but it is a suppose a world needed the kinds of things that Jesus brought to our world. So, and that's important to remember, that Lewis's own name for the kind of literature he was writing in the Narnia series is supposal, let's suppose, rather than an allegory. But anyway, Lewis goes on in this letter and says, "Now, if Lawrence is bothered because he finds the lion body seems nicer to him than the man body, Jesus, I don't think he need be bothered by all that." And here's a beautiful, beautiful quote. "God knows all about the way a little boy's imagination works. He made it, after all, and knows that at a certain age, the idea of talking and friendly animals is very attractive. So I don't think he minds if Lawrence likes the lion body. And anyway, Lawrence will find as he grows older that feeling like liking the lion body better will die away of itself without his taking any trouble about it. So he needn't bother." You can tell through this letter that Lewis is trying to reassure this mother, it's okay, it's okay. And then number three, Lewis actually suggests how Lawrence might begin praying. So he says, "If I were Lawrence, I'd just say in my prayers something like this. Dear God, if the things I've been thinking and feeling about those books are things you don't like and are bad for me, please take away those feelings and thoughts. But if they're not bad, then please stop me from worrying about them and help me every day to love you more in the way that really matters, far more than feelings or imaginations, by doing what you want and growing more like you." That is the sort of thing I think Lawrence should say for himself, but it would be kind and Christian-like if he also added, "And God, if Mr. Lewis has worried any other children by his books or done them any harm, then please forgive him and help him never to do it again." Oh, and then he ends the letter to this mother by saying, "Will these three things help? I'm terribly sorry to have caused such trouble and would take it as a great favor if you would write again and tell me how Lawrence goes on. I shall, of course," and here's another key to why people felt heard by him, "I shall, of course, have him daily in my prayers. He must be a corker of a boy. I hope you are prepared for the possibility he might turn out a saint. I dare say the saints' mothers have, in some ways, a rough time." Yours sincerely, C.S. Lewis. So isn't that interesting that, you know, this young child would realize what has captured him in these books and then is afraid, are my, you know, affections or loyalties not in the right place? And Lewis was serious about helping with that. Absolutely serious.
So I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. When you taught these Narnia books, which I think probably for some of our listeners, they will have read them as children, the Narnia series, and some may have read them as adults and some may not have read them at all. But for you teaching them to children, what kind of experiences or not letters, but what kinds of reactions did children that you taught have to these books that may have been, you know, something they wanted to ask C.S. Lewis?
You know, I do have a whole stack of letters that my students wrote to C.S. Lewis because they wanted, after reading some of his letters to children, I think what they were attracted to, Jamie, was, I am heard by a person, and there's someone who is playful with me, and there's someone who speaks honestly about the world to me. So my students got so captivated by some of these letters, and one of them in particular that they thought was, they would say, very cool, was a letter to a young woman who had said, "Oh, I love these books." And his response was, "I'm so glad to hear that you liked the Narnia books. It was very good of you to write and tell me that you did. Everyone is pleased, you know, to be appreciated, even elderly authors." So with that, those kinds of letters and hearing Lewis's voice in responding to children, they wanted to write as well. And they wrote letters in the same spirit of all these other letters. I had one, I was teaching in Seattle at the time, and I had one student write a letter that said, "If Reepa Cheep were really a live creature, and I so want him to be, I would take him to the top of the Space Needle because I think he would want to see the world from there. And I think I'd have to be careful to watch him because I think he'd climb to the top and up the spire." So they had so much fun writing to Lewis. Some of them wrote about how much they were moved by Aslan taking Edmund's place. I think that wonder of someone who loves you enough to take your place when things are wrong or hurtful, or someone who, another child wrote about having someone beside them when hard things need to be taken on, someone they could trust. So trust was another characteristic that they felt came through the letters that Lewis wrote and through those books. That trust and camaraderie and companionship and having a community that supports each other, they really picked that up and ached to be a part of that kind of world, which, you know, is really an important world to create for children if we can. So those are some of the things that come to mind in the ways they responded.
It's interesting to me that this series of letters, which we didn't mention at the beginning, but the letters themselves are actually in a book. I mean, you didn't just find these letters out of the blue.
Yes.
There is in fact a book of letters to, you know, letters from children. Uh-huh. Why do you think that this collection was put together and was important, and why do people enjoy reading this so much? This just letters.
Yes. You know, the book was actually compiled in about 1985, so it's been around for a long time, and a lot of people are not as aware that it's out there. There are two huge volumes of other letters that C.S. Lewis wrote, and I think the wonder of letters is actually, it becomes primary source material. Those of you who love history, you actually get to hear the voice of the person that either you're reading, something else they wrote. Those letters really reveal the heart and the daily life of a person, so you can enter into understanding that person in a better way. There is one letter in this book that was written by a young person who said that she must have said, because of the answer, she must have said, "You must be so proud to know that these books have helped me know Jesus better or know Christ better." And here's his wonderful response. And it's a character trait. It's a expression of, I call it true Christianity, that I think we need to hear today. And here's his response: "Instead of making me proud, it makes me, I think, more humble than proud to know that Aslan has allowed me to be the means of making him," capital letter H, so Christ, "more real to you. Because he could have used anyone. I mean, let's remember that he made a donkey preach a good sermon to Balaam." So he's trying to express that If these books in any way have encouraged your relationship with Christ, I feel completely humbled that I was used by God to do that. So there's a real authentic sense of what a privilege it's been to be a part of your spiritual journey, rather than look at me, I'm great. And so it's, you know, putting those letters together help you see a side of Lewis that you don't see through the other writing. And so I think those letters were so unique and spoke of who he was. So that's my guess as to why it felt important to compile this specific volume that is the letters just to children, instead of big, huge volumes that include a lot of his other letters. And you know, he often said in a lot of letters, he would end, and one of them I will quote him, "Don't forget sometimes to put in a word for me when you say your prayers, and I'll do the same for you." So there was this mutual support through praying for one another that he often would express in those letters as well.
You know, I want to, I kind of want to shift a little bit. I think this is, it's so important for us to think about, you know, imagination and fun and the playfulness. But I know you also have mentioned that kids also wrote to him about some hard things and some sad things. And I know that as we are, you know, try to avoid in this conversation some of the hard things in the world, but he has some great reminders of how we move through hard things. Can you just share a little bit about how did he handle it when kids wrote to him about hard things or sad things?
You know, I can tell from these letters that were compiled that some of the children who wrote understood that there were some difficult times for him, and so he responds honestly. I've got a couple letters here that are representative of how he would respond. In one of the letters, which is so famous, a lot of people know about this letter because, again, it's to that same little boy, Lawrence. And he had an opinion about the order in which the books should be presented. What is book one and what is book seven? And he thought that that should happen in the chronological progression of the story of Narnia, which Lewis wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe first, and then he wrote those other sequels, but he also had a prequel. A letter that came, The Magician's Nephew, came before The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So his imagination had him going after The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but also thinking now, how did things happen before The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? So Lawrence is writing him about that. And Lewis says very famously in this 1957 letter of April 23rd, that he thinks he agrees with the order of reading the books more than how his mom likes to read the books. So anyway, in this delightful letter about the sequence of the books, he also says at the end, "Well, I can't say I have had a happy Easter, for I have lately got married and my wife is very, very ill. I'm sure Aslan knows best, and whether he leaves her with me or takes her to his own country," which he's echoing the last battle, "he will do what is right. But of course it makes me very sad. I am sure you and your mother will pray for us." So that's one way of his... He knows Lawrence loves Aslan, and he's already written that letter that says it's okay. So he actually calls Christ Aslan and then, you know, says this person that you've grown, the characteristics of Aslan that you've grown to love, they are also in the Christ that I worship and trust with this very hard time in my life. And then there's another letter that's really fascinating. It was written in 1956, so a year before the one I just referenced. Sarah, a child named Sarah, had sent him. So these children are not just writing, they're sending him gifts too. He says, "Thank you for the beautiful little jar. I'm trying to think of some treasure choice enough," which of course is a British expression for precious enough, "to put in it." So he is acknowledging her lovely gift. And then says, "I'm also very ashamed of not having sent you a card this Christmas." So Sarah was one of his godchildren. "But I'm really snowed under. All domestic help was away for the holidays. I have a sick, very sick wife to visit daily in the hospital." So that was before they had brought her home. "At home, I had to look after a sick brother." So even Warnie was sick. "And two schoolboy stepsons." So Joy's stepsons were there with him. "One dog, one cat, four geese, umpteen hens, two stoves, three pipes in danger of freezing. So I was pretty busy and pretty tired. Well, all good wishes to all of you, and here's a New Year's gift." So he is, we don't know what the gift was, but he sent her something back. But it was written on the 30th of December, so he is just explaining why he didn't get it in time for the holidays. So he was very honest with the things that can pile up and the situation that he was in while Joy was in the hospital was just really overwhelming. And he wasn't afraid to tell children the realities of life, which I think is so important. And you always choose age-appropriate communication, but it's okay to know that things are hard. It's not just, let's make everything happy for the children while as they go through life. That's not always really accomplishing what you want. Yes, we want them to be happy. Yes, we want them to feel safe. But what prepares them for the realities of life is understanding that difficulties really are a part of this life here.
It's interesting to think about his, going back to what you said at the beginning, that he really didn't feel like he related to children or didn't really like children. And yet I think the work that for most people that he's most well known is the Narnia series. I mean, he's written several other books for adults, and those are, you know, great and well-known. But I think, you know, if you were to say C.S. Lewis to most people, they would think Narnia. And so it's just interesting how well he has captured a good way to relate to children, you know, being able to not treat them like adults in a bad way, but treat them with respect that they do understand what he's saying, that they are appreciative of a response to his letters, and they are appreciative of the honesty that he's able to give them. So that's very interesting that he didn't recognize that he had those skills.
It is, you know, there was a lot of self-doubt around being able to relate to children. And yet in so many of his essays about writing, he is adamant. In fact, in one quote, it's, "I think it should be put in canon." So he's being very serious that if a children's book is not worth reading as an adult, it's not a good children's book. So, and I think what he's trying to, if I can interpret what he's trying to say in that comment, is there should be adventure and themes and characters and interactions that would appeal no matter what age you are. And of course, we always have that. I think we've talked about this before, Jamie, but that beautiful dedication to the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I just want to read a little bit of that because I think that's why he's so effective, not only in writing the Narnia books, but also in these letters and the response he gets from children. He says, "My dear Lucy," and Lucy was his goddaughter, and he just was following her life very closely. But he says, here's the dedication, "I wrote this story for you, but when I began it, I had not realized that girls grow quicker than books. As a result, you are already too old for fairy tales, and by the time it's printed and bound, you will be older still. But someday, you will be old enough to start reading fairy tales again." So here's that wonder of childhood that shouldn't be talked down to or written down to. And then as you get older, you realize the wonder of these stories. And then you've got that a little bit too sophisticated in that middle time. But then he goes on, "You can take it down from some upper shelf, dust it off, and tell me what you think of it. I shall probably be too deaf to hear and too old to understand a word you say, but I shall still be your affectionate godfather, C.S. Lewis." So his whole perspective was, if you're going to be writing for children, if you're going to be speaking to children, if you're going to write to children in letters, respect who they are, hear them, and come alongside their concerns, be playful, and also address their deeper questions like he did with Lawrence. Oh dear, am I loving this too much?
Well, I know of folks that are interested in reading all of these letters. The book is called Letters to Children by C.S. Lewis.
That's its title. Yes.
So if you're at home and you'd like to check these letters out for yourself, you're welcome to do that. Letters to Children by C.S. Lewis.
And it's not given by C.S. Lewis. It's actually editors that have put it together. And so it's Lyle Dorset and Marjorie Lamp Mead, who've done a lot of compiling papers and materials by C.S. Lewis. So that is what's on the cover of the book is, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining me.
It's been a delight.
And folks at home, thank you all for joining us this month for a different kind of conversation. I hope everyone has a wonderful week.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.